Hey there, listeners. This is Justin with a quick note before today's episode. It is not too late to sign up for Beyond the Uniform's Mastermind course and Mastermind groups. There are four different options on our website, and we've got 2 to 3 spots left in one of those groups. So if you are interested, check it out. It's a way to connect with other people headed in a similar direction, to hold each other accountable, and to support and challenge each other to be our personal best. I'm very excited to connect with you in a one-on-one environment and group environment. So if you're interested in taking things to the next level, it's not too late. You can find more at the beyondtheuniform.org website under the Mastermind groups. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I am Justin Nasiri, and my goal is to help military veterans succeed in their civilian career. I do this by meeting with veterans, learning about their career path to highlight all the incredible options out there for members of the armed forces after their military service. We talk about what they do, how they got there, and their advice for anyone wanting to follow in their footsteps. Today's episode number 259 with Brian Olivier.
I remember going out for a run and just thinking like, gosh, I'm going out here. I got all this extra stuff in my bag. It'd be really nice to have a much more concentrated version of glucose that could be a lot more convenient to kind of carry around with me. And that's where the idea started.
Brian faced an unexpected departure from the military, which eventually led to his side hustle, Glue Confidence. In this interview, we go step by step through the crowdfunding process. We also talk about the importance of doing something you love with a startup so that not everything is tied to a financial outcome. We also talk about what it's like to start a company while working full-time and supporting a family. This is a great interview for aspiring entrepreneurs or anyone interested in taking their side project to the next level. As always at beyondtheuniform.io, we feature in our show notes links to everything we discuss. There's a lot of great references for this interview if you want to go back and revisit that. Thanks to Kathleen Dillon, who provides text transcripts in case you want to zoom in on anything outside of the audio portion. You'll also find information on our website about our coaching program, where we connect you with subsidized professional career and executive coaches who are experts at helping you figure out your next career move. Also, I wanted to give a quick shout out to Josh Lauman, who on iTunes left a great review for us. Josh said, "Beyond the Uniform is a fantastic resource for transitioning veterans or anyone considering a big career transition. Justin is an excellent interviewer and his guests are extremely impressive. Their conversations highlight the breadth of career paths that veterans take. I wish this podcast existed when I transitioned." Josh, thank you so much for your support, and thank you to all of the 105 other people who left positive reviews on iTunes. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Brian. Joining me today in Louisville, Kentucky is Brian Olivier. Brian, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Yeah, thanks, Justin, for having me.
So for listeners, I want to give you a rundown on Brian's background. He's a regional business development manager at Medtronic, which is a global healthcare solutions company operating in approximately 160 countries. He started out at the Naval Academy as part of the best class that ever was, the class of 2002, and he served in the Navy as a helicopter pilot for 4 years. After his military service, he worked in residential construction at Toll Brothers as an assistant project manager, and then at Procter & Gamble as a logistics manager. He has worked at Medtronic for over 6 years in medical device sales and marketing, and he holds an MBA from the Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management. So Brian, I'd love to just, you know, there's so many things we could dive into about your background, but I really want to start off by just diving in about your side project, which is Glue Confidence. How would you describe that for listeners?
Yeah, well, Glue Confidence is 30 grams of a fast acting, great tasting glucose that's in a convenient 2 ounce bottle. And the mission behind Glue Confidence is to provide a product for people with diabetes so that they can be confident enough to live a life without limits.
And where did the idea come from? Like, what was the genesis?
Yeah, so, it started from my own personal story. As you mentioned, class of 2002, woohoo, and went right into aviation right out of that and was flying helicopters down in Jacksonville, Florida. And was actually flying and had, was with the Proud Warriors of HSL 42 down there doing the LAMPS mission. and was getting ready to deploy to the Gulf. I had my detachment all set up and ready to go, and actually started losing weight, feeling lousy, feeling sick, and developed type 1 diabetes while I was flying. So I got diagnosed while I was in the squadron. So unfortunately, with type 1, you can't fly anymore. It's you're not permitted to do any type of military operations with type 1. And so unfortunately, found out that I had to get discharged from the Navy and couldn't fly anymore as well. So it was a bummer at the time.
And so, you know, you as listeners kind of heard, you had a pretty diverse career, not diverse career. You had a lot of experience over the last 7+ years. At what point did you think, you know, you have this personal problem? At what point do you think, like, I can actually address this, and this is how I'm going to do it?
Yeah, well, after you know, learning to manage diabetes, you know, it's you require insulin if you have type 1. So people with type 1 diabetes typically have to take several shots of insulin a day. So you're doing a lot of injections each day. Then you're also testing your blood glucose. So you're pricking your fingers and checking your blood sugar as well. You're doing that several times a day as well. And so it can be a challenge. There's a lot to do and a lot to manage. Well, one thing I didn't want to give up when I got diagnosed was just my active lifestyle. I played sports my whole life and just enjoyed, you know, running and working out and playing sports. And so what I would find that when I was training or doing long runs, I tended to get a lot of low blood sugars, which is common for people with diabetes that are using insulin. And so I'd be going on these long runs and I get low blood sugars and I have to stop or figure out a way to treat the lows. And so what I would do then, I would run with a backpack, basically. And I have the backpack full of juices. So I have like 8-ounce bottles of grape juice, or I'd have some, you know, gummy bears or, you know, candy bars or whatever, orange juice. And I'd be running around with all this stuff in my backpack. And I remember going out for a run and just thinking, like, gosh, I'm going out here. I got all this extra stuff in my bag. You know, it'd be really nice to have a much more concentrated version of glucose that could be a lot more convenient to kind of carry around with me. And that's where the idea started.
That's awesome. I love when businesses are born kind of out of a personal pain point and experience. And I think your story illustrates of, you know, one example of where these ideas can come from. And I'd love to talk about, you know, I think the bulk for listeners of our conversation will be around crowdfunding. And what led you to that? Like, at what point did you say, hey, I actually need more money to do this? And maybe as part of that, if you could describe what crowdfunding is.
Sure. So I think, you know, as I got thinking more seriously about the business and the idea and ready to go forward, I had it in my head for a while. Now is the time to, you know, then it was time to figure out, all right, how do I get this out there? And what would be those first steps? You know, the typical, I guess, path that people do is you come up with a, you know, business plan, you think about it, you put together the pieces, and then, you know, go out and raise money. Either you do it through friends and family, or you get some investors, you get that money going together, and then you develop your product and build it and go out and try to get some sales. And which is an option that a lot of people go with. What crowdfunding does is you kind of can do two things at the same time. One, you can kind of validate your idea or the concept that you have. And then two, you can actually get sales and you can get customers on board with that first production that you do. That can save you from having a ton of inventory of something that nobody wants and nobody wants to buy. So a lot of people can make that mistake as well. And so as I learned more about crowdfunding, that was a direction that I wanted to go in. And then I started kind of diving in and learning about the different platforms that are out there. You know, there's Kickstarter, there's Indiegogo, as well as several others. But that seemed to fit into what I wanted to do.
So if someone listening is interested in crowdfunding, how do they know whether or not it's a right fit for them or a right fit for the product or service that they're developing?
Yeah, it's a good question. So if you go online, you look at, you know, a lot of the programs are already going on Kickstarter, a lot of the campaigns on Kickstarter or Indiegogo, you can kind of get an idea of the theme of what kind of products are out there. Typically, crowdfunding tends to trend a little bit more towards the younger, probably male demographic. You'll see there's a lot of games on there. There's a lot of tech, tons of technology. I think one of the crowdfunding campaigns that's the most successful has been like a bike, like a electronic bike that they're developing. So there's a lot of different products that could be out there. You can go on there and get an idea of of kind of what would be right. But I'd say typically male, kind of younger, is the main demographic. One of the nice things about crowdfunding, if you look at a campaign like with Kickstarter, is that you set the goal of what you want. You know, it might be a $30,000 raise that you're trying to achieve. And then, you know, you go out there, you try to raise it. And if you don't achieve that amount, like on Kickstarter, you basically, the campaign is basically closed down, and everyone will get a refund basically. So if you don't achieve the 30K, if you raise 25K, you basically don't go forward. Everyone gets their money back. With Indiegogo, they actually have some features now that they just updated recently. If you have a campaign goal of 30K, but you raise 25K or 27K, the campaign can actually still move forward. You have an option when you set up the campaign in the very beginning that you can say, you know what, I didn't make my goal, but I still want to go forward. And then you can cover that amount and move the program forward at that point. So there's different crowdfunding platforms with different rules. I definitely encourage people to kind of read what some of those are. But what I found is that Indiegogo had a bit more flexibility than some of the others.
And we'll get pretty tactical on how to run one of these campaigns. But for context, could you share a little bit more about what was your experience with crowdfunding? Like, how much did you set out to raise? How did that go?
Yeah, so my experience was basically my goal was for a raise of $30,000, and so the $30,000 was going to get me my first production run at a co-packer in Cincinnati. So I'd worked with them, I'd gone through my labels, my bottles, the formulation, and basically, you know, for that minimal run, the production run they have to produce it online. They have these big tanks that they need to fill up. So it was about $30,000 to get that first production run out. And then so I could go forward and start selling and getting some feedback.
And so, you know, based on your experience and what you learned, could you kind of just walk us through your advice if someone is listening, wants to run a crowdfunding campaign? What's the tactics here?
Yeah, so there's a ton of learning kind of going into this, but basically the biggest thing I'd say is preparation is key. You know, preparation is key for everything. Just like you would prepare for an interview, you want to prepare for crowdfunding. And really the learning that I had, this being the first campaign that I've run, was that this takes a lot of preparation to do the right way. If you go online and learn about the campaigns and see them, you know, there's a lot of back-end work to prepare, because you're not only launching the campaign, but you want to build credibility with your potential customers that you can actually pull this off. And so you want to make sure you have a good video and that you have a very nice, you know, launch website up and going. So those things would be essential.
And, you know, there's also vendors within the crowdfunding space. What are those and how should listeners think about that?
Yeah, actually, Justin, let me go back. I got a bunch more I want to share.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to rush you on yet. You got open runway here, brother.
So we talked a little bit about, you know, the preparation, but basically, so as far as preparation goes, I started about 3 to 4 months out, and you want to really gather a really kind of passionate tribe kind of that's going to be buying that product when you launch. And so what you're doing several months beforehand is gathering emails, gathering contacts. It could be friends, it could be family, but really doing a lot of the grassroots work on the front end. You know, a lot of people think like crowdfunding is just you put a product on a page, you hit launch, and you sit back and people start buying it. But that's not how the successful campaigns are done. There's a ton of work and strategy leading up to it.
So is there a goal there? Like, how many people are you thinking of here in that 3 to 4 months? Like, if you could wave a magic wand, like how many people would you want on that list, or is there like a minimum target?
Yeah, it's a great question. So ideally, it's going to be dependent on what kind of campaign you're doing, what you want to raise. But the ideal number you want to hit close to is you want 30% of your raise to be completed within 24 hours of launch.
Wow.
And what that does is it sets off, it's a big amount. So you're not going to get that just by kind of, you know, walking in day one and hitting, you know, open on your campaign and getting people to come in. But you really want to get that momentum. And the reason is there's a lot of metrics behind the scenes that are working at you know, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, where if you do get that momentum, they actually have a lot of support for you. They'll have resources. They'll put you on a page basically saying you're one of the key launches. And that momentum allows more people to see your campaign, and more people will naturally, jump in and support you. The best analogy I've heard is it's a lot like when you're at a wedding And the dance floor is wide open. Like when the music gets going, nobody at a wedding wants to be the first couple out there on the dance floor. But the second, like you get a couple people out there, everyone wants to jump in and get it going. It's the same thing with crowdfunding. You want to have that initial big jump that you have already kind of established and try to hit that 30% mark in the first 24 hours.
And just to put that in context for listeners, you know, if you're talking about raising $30,000, that's $9,000. It almost sounds like, Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, it almost sounds like you want to earmark people and be like, okay, I got $9,000 I need to get raised. I know that my uncle's good for $100. My parents are good for $200. So like literally starting to like plan out and say like, do I have enough people to make it to, in this example, $9,000 guaranteed that people are going to respond and put that money to use. Is that right?
Yeah, that'd be correct. And it just goes into, you know, the pre-work that is needed, getting the friends and family, but also a lot of other contacts. You know, we were, you know, planning to sell GluConfidence basically in a 1 month supply, which would be 8 bottles mailed direct to your door. It'd be about $29. So that's quite a few, you know, people to get on board as you launch. And on top of that, if you're doing this a couple months ahead of time, you really want to keep those people excited and engaged. So you don't want to spread this out 5 or 6 months before you launch. You really just want, you know, a couple months before launch, get the word out there, start an email campaign, keeping people engaged, you know, excited about the launch, and then really making a big deal leading up to the day of launch that everyone's on board, they know when it's coming out, and then having a really big first 24 hours.
So does that mean like in those three months leading up to it, were you sending out kind of like monthly emails or weekly emails or like any advice on cadence on how to like keep that excitement going?
Yeah, it's so I would say that the longer lead time you have, the harder it is to maintain that excitement. And so that was a learning that I had quite transparently on this launch is like you probably want to keep it to about 2 months lead time. But I use a software called Klaviyo, a service called Klaviyo, which is a digital email automation marketing service that has a ton of great metrics on open rates and click-through rates on, you know, what kind of headline or title you want to put on your email to get more opens. And I kind of did a lot of tracking of that. You want to make sure too, when you do your email campaigns, you're not burning the bridge with any of the large email servers like Gmail, which will kind of notify you as spam if you're just blasting people. So you want to be very concise with your marketing campaigns leading up to it, and make sure that people are opening and engaged. Otherwise, you can get, the bots on Gmail could block you and block your email from even getting out to those customers. So it's a fine line to be walking. And so I recommend services, like I just said, like Klaviyo or one of the others that allow you to check your metrics and make sure you're not identified as spam. So you got to make sure you do a good job of that.
And another question I had, you know, thinking about this, the 3 months leading up to launch, how do you think about the amount to raise, right? Because it seems like there's a gaming component. Maybe I want $30,000, but you know, maybe there's an advantage of having that 30% more achievable. So maybe it's like, do I say 20,000 and want to be oversubscribed, or like, do you have any thoughts on how to game that?
Yeah, and it is. There's a lot of gamesmanship here. It's an art and a science was what my learning was. So you're right. So my goal was 30,000, and some guys will go out and try to raise 10,000, but really knowing that they have commitments for over that, so they're going over. Over their plan in the first 24 hours. And then it looks like a rock star event. And then it looks like everyone's on board. You know, everyone's out on that wedding dance floor and people want to, you know, join the party and put into it too. So you can game it that way. I think the risk there is is the level of what you want to start off with and make sure that you feel strongly you'll get that momentum to achieve the overall funding. You know, if I'm going for 50,000, put my target at 10,000, you know, do I feel really confident I'll be able to 5X, you know, what my target is to get up to there? And nobody knows the answer. You don't know that until you get started and go try it. But there's definitely some gamesmanship there that can make your campaign look better and also help get it moving up the charts on those platforms.
Awesome. So I derailed you. You were in the midst of laying out the plan, but I'll get out of your way now.
Yeah. So basically, that's it leading up to it. We do email campaigns. The tool that I probably found the most helpful and useful for my product was Facebook messaging. We did a very simple SurveyMonkey survey basically and targeted groups that were associated kind of with diabetes basically on Facebook Messenger, and we're able to get a lot of people to sign up that way. We got, gosh, we did about almost 1 million impressions on Facebook Messenger. Like we got about, our click-through rates were about 3.7%, which which is pretty solid. But our conversion rates, which we were measuring off of getting email addresses, so the action, call to action is basically people would give us their email for more information if they're interested in the product, we're about 25%, which is a really, really high conversion rate. So all the metrics going into it were really solid to show that people had, you know, an interest in the idea or the concept of the product. And we ended up launching, we had about 7,000 emails when we launched the campaign. So we had a lot of emails going forward.
And just, I apologize for not grasping this, is the, so it sounds like Facebook Messenger was really effective. Were you using Klaviyo for that? Or like, how are you utilizing Facebook Messenger?
Yeah, so we use Facebook Messenger to collect, to do the survey and to get people's email, but also answer a couple questions about the product concept. And so we collected that information separately. Then off of that information, we just got the very large email list, and every week we got the feedback back, the new emails, the fresh email leads we'd feed into Klaviyo and just kind of get that automated marketing up and going. So we're both kind of acquiring new people who are interested on email through Facebook Messenger, which is fairly cheap on a, you know, per person, and then taking that data and dumping it into Klaviyo, which would then get them into our automated email sequence and keep them engaged from that point going forward.
What sort of, you know, either two ways to answer this, either what sort of budget did you set aside, or if you're not comfortable sharing that, like what sort of budget would you recommend? Because I'm realizing as you're saying this, it's like your goal is to raise money, but it's clear between Klaviyo and these other things, you're going to have to spend some money to try to raise money. So any recommendations around that?
Yeah, and this is a learning for me too. So what I learned from this process is that you can get, you can do initial tests. It's actually really, really interesting is you can, if you have this concept, the idea, and you can go target, you know, certain Facebook groups and just reach out via Messenger and do a simple survey and make it easy for the people to engage and leave their information or give feedback. You can do some pretty interesting like product market fit for $5,000. If you want to get more robust, you can go, you know, $5,000 to $10,000, depending on how many people you want to get in there initially. But you'll have a pretty good idea from that feedback. You know, if our conversion rate was like, you know, 0.002% on, you know, a couple thousand, you know, potential leads, we know there might be something, you know, with how we're messaging this or maybe the product, and you can go back and figure things out. But you can even go smaller than that. You could do it for $1,000 and go out and just kind of do some tests. It was really, really interesting to see feedback directly from, you know, the people that we were contacting, and they were open. I was actually surprised at how many people were open to give the feedback.
And I'm guessing, you know, just to be specific in your use case, with Facebook, you're able to target. I don't know if people like put in their interests that they're, you know, interested in. I don't. There must be some sort of groups that you're targeting, or some sort of insight you're getting from Facebook of saying like these people are going to, they have diabetes, or they, you know, there's some targeting component there, right?
Yeah. So for me, I mean, my product is, we're focused on people with diabetes, insulin taking, you know, people with diabetes. And so that's a pretty, you know, pretty concise group of people. So there's all sorts of support groups out there for people living with type 1 or people that are, you know, managing their diabetes with insulin, or just having challenges with their diabetes. It's a challenging, you know, chronic disease. So if you go online and start searching, there's all sorts of support groups and groups like that that, you know, that you can find via that way. Whatever your product or service would be, you can go into Facebook, kind of do those searches. Like I said, pretty inexpensively do some surveys, start gathering that information. And then with that, you can build a pretty robust, you know, email campaign and start getting some feedback.
Awesome. And then what else in this process should people know?
I think the other thing is that, you know, it's a lot of work. So you obviously go into this with eyes wide open. I'd recommend, you know, if you're doing it by yourself, make sure you have some time dedicated to this. It's going to be, you know, nights and weekends if you're doing a full-time job. If you have a partner, you can probably spread the workload out a little bit more, but just be ready that it's going to be an engagement to do like a quality launch. The other thing you really need is a video. You really want to have a quality short video, probably, you know, a minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes most, that highlights your product and your team. And you want that to be, you know, catchy, because that's what everyone's watching when they go on one of these crowdfunding sites. You know, you want to have a good video to kind of draw them in and keep them interested.
Did you make that yourself, or was there someone you pulled in to do that?
Yeah, so it's you could do it yourself. I actually went with a I had a person here in Louisville, Kentucky that does videos, so I reached out to them and they did my video. I will say this though, but going back to the Facebook Messenger, like we did that super cheap. I literally just recorded. I did like a little GIF actually that we put out there too, a little video. It was about 10 or 15 seconds of me talking just on my phone. And that was what drove people to click and then kind of engage with our survey. So for basically, no money, you can just use your phone, your camera phone, do a quick video and get that out there. So for the short little GIFs, you use your phone. For the longer videos, you make yourself if you have that skill, or you can go have a video person do it.
And what should someone expect if they hire someone to do the video? Like, what does it run for, like a minute and a half video?
As far as cost,
Yeah.
yeah, if you're looking at a, I mean, if you're gonna get like professionally done and have them come out and film, you're looking at a couple $1,000. So I'd say expect between maybe two. Well, if you get college kids to do it too, I know some guys that have success with the college kids going out and just doing it as a side project. But probably anywhere from 1 to 3,000. You could even go up to 5 or 6,000, I bet.
Awesome. And then as we kind of step through the process, what's next?
Yeah, so basically, you do the pre-work. In our experience, we had the email list. We had a concept. It's interesting. Launching a product like mine was it's a drink, right? It's a 2 ounce drink for people with diabetes, focused just on that demographic. So it's very, very sweet, very concentrated, so people can pursue activities or sports without carrying a huge thing of juice or anything on it. But they can have it handy if they're at work or in their car, or by their bed at night or wherever. But going through that launch process, I originally wanted to launch on Kickstarter, but Kickstarter had identified us as a supplement, and Kickstarter will not promote or do supplements. And so the reason we went with Indiegogo was because Kickstarter, did not accept us basically. Indiegogo did, but then as I found out more, Indiegogo had that flexibility, which was actually nice. So if you don't raise the total money you want, but you get close, you can still move forward, whereas Kickstarter doesn't offer that flexibility. So I think the learning there of what site you go to and where you launch is good to do that research to see what fits best for your product or for your launch. So we did the lead into it. We had all of the the product kind of ready to go, the video, the email list, and then we launched in September. I remember reaching out to click the launch button. I was like, ready to go. It's gonna have $30,000 in the next week or so. So it was exciting. It was exciting to get all that work and everything else. You've done all the things right. You click the button, and you're like, all right, now it's time to see the return.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And what did that week look like? You click that launch button. What does your life look like?
It's a good question. So you hit that launch button, and you have a lot of work to do. So if you are working a full-time job, I would recommend that first day or the first day, maybe taking that day off. Typically Tuesdays are a good day to launch. Historically, those are the best kind of launch days. But you have a lot of questions. You have people who are engaging with you via email. You just had a large email blast you sent out, so I'm sure you'll have responses from people or things like that. You want to be on the ball with responding. And just monitoring the campaign as it launches. You can imagine if you're going to hit 30% in the first 24 hours, there's a lot of things moving and moving pieces going on. So you just want to kind of be there to support and just kind of monitor things. There are prizes and awards you can offer as well. So we had several awards for people who bought certain amounts of products. They might get a little extra free product or a bigger discount for the more volume that they bought. So as those prizes and awards get purchased, you may want to offer more of whatever that award size is, so you don't run out. You don't want to run out of something, if it does really pick up quite quickly. So the first day is just kind of monitoring, and then ongoing, you're basically checking status, and then every week or two, you're doing status updates, just letting the people who have purchased, let them know where you are, how excited you are over the campaign, where the campaign is, how much time is left. We launched with a 6-week campaign, and just kind of giving updates along the way.
Awesome. Were there, as you were putting together this plan, were there any resources that you found helpful that you would recommend to listeners?
Yeah, so I actually reached out to someone through a network. Actually, it's a military kind of alumni network of someone who's familiar with doing the Facebook marketing campaigns. I quite honest, I don't have any of that skill set. I'm not a technical person. All of this was learning to me. I never did a digital email marketing campaign. So learning Klaviyo took some time to get into that. And also, partnering with someone who could do some of the marketing on Facebook. So I recommend, reaching out to a person if you can't do it yourself. The two sites that I found really helpful that I learned a lot about were Fiverr and Upwork, which are phenomenal. They're basically just really, gig type of outsourcing, platforms where you just post a project, how much you want to pay for it, and people will bid on it, and you can pay them to do it. And what I found was I could get a lot done on those two platforms, just little simple digital, tools or little videos or things I want to get done. I had a gentleman in Ukraine that I met early on, and he did phenomenal work for probably one-tenth the amount that I could have paid someone in the U.S. So, there's nothing better than coming home from a long day of work and you've got a project that's already been completed by someone who's, sleeping on the other side of the world and getting the work done for you while you're sleeping. So it was really nice to get in a rhythm with him. And that's a really powerful tool. That was one of the learnings that I had coming out of this.
I love it. I have used both of those sites extensively, and it's amazing. It's kind of like a secret weapon. Like the other day at work, I had assembled a list of companies, and I needed to figure out, it was like a list of 100 companies, and I needed to figure out what industries they were in and how many employees they had and their websites. And ordinarily that would be hours and hours of my work. And instead I put it on Upwork. It took about 5 minutes. I paid about $6 and someone in whatever country put that together for me. And it's kind of a judo move that you can use to get a lot more done on the cheap, and kind of use your time more effectively. So I'll add those links in the show notes too, for listeners, for Fiverr and for Upwork.
And by the way, it's exciting to see the quality of the work they do too. I had concerns about how good it's going to be, but oh my gosh, there's some very talented people that are willing to do great work for $5. And it's pretty neat to see.
And when we were trading emails, you had mentioned something about second level needs of customers. Could you explain for listeners what you mean by that and any thoughts around that?
Yeah. So I think it's all part of this journey that I'm on right now, which is further, customer discovery. And, our launch, so my launch and my story kind of the launch was we didn't successfully raise the funding we needed. We came up short of the $30,000. And so, initially that was a big disappointment, obviously. You do all this work, you do all the right things, you feel like you're doing the right things. But we got a ton of, feedback in the launch. And so I guess my feedback would be, even if you don't achieve the goal that you did with the launch, you'll get so much market feedback from the group, or, from your customers that you're trying to market to and trying to develop this product to. I have all the emails now. I'm interacting with them with more, more surveys and things like that. It can be very, very eye-opening and actually a really good overall kind of learning experience for you too, as far as feedback goes for your product. And so what we found in this, at a high level, this looks like it's just a concentrated, drink basically with a lot of sugar in it to help diabetics, done. But what we found in the surveys is that there were these kind of next level needs that people had that were really important. One of them was the discreetness of the product. And so people who live with diabetes are working every day out in the world doing their day-to-day jobs and at school and everything else. And a lot of people don't want the public to know they have a disease, that they have a chronic disease. They'd rather keep it personal, keep it to themselves. And so when you're taking out all this juice and all this candy and stuff and chomping down it in the middle of a meeting, some people are like, gosh, I don't want to draw attention to myself. So to treat a low blood sugar, to manage it and take some glucose for that, it's very important for that to be discreet and not to be a lot of activity. A lot of things need to happen to do that. So that feedback came back loud and clear. The other thing that came back was the packaging and the form factor was actually really, really important. And not quite as much as the flavor. Flavor is important. It's got to taste good. But what the final packaging will look like, it has to be, have high survivability. It's got to be able to be in a backpack and it's got to be able to be in your car and handle the heat. It's got to be able to be carried. If you're working out, you don't want to lug around a big, heavy thing. So we got really good feedback on the form factor and on the importance of, say, discreetness, which I wouldn't have really thought about before launch, but that ultimately is going to help us make a better product. And as we revise what we're doing, that feedback is really important. So those would kind of be the second level learnings that you don't expect going into this, but they're incredibly important as you develop your final product.
That's great. I mean, I think that's such a there's so much wisdom in what Brian's talking about here about the second level need, and there's so many examples of companies that have kept the curiosity that Brian's displaying here, which is like not being, especially when you're birthing a new product, there's so much emotional attachment, and you can have a vision of what that product does for you. Like in Brian's case, this is coming from his own personal pain point, so he knows what it does for him. But I love the openness of that insight, such a critical insight of like, wow, people, actually really value this for the discretion of being able to have more privacy. Privacy with their diabetes. And that insight can change everything. That can change the product itself. That could lead to other products. That leads to how you market it because you understand the pain. So maybe, one example, I'm just making this up, but maybe the initial marketing was going to be, that this product helps you keep an active lifestyle if you want to run marathons and you have diabetes. And then maybe this insight changes that to like, do diabetes on your own terms in a private way. It's completely different, but it's the same product. And I think that that's been difficult for me, and I've seen other entrepreneurs struggle with that, is keeping that openness, keeping that curiosity, really letting the market tell you where the biggest need is. Because if you start a company with your own pain point, there's always the possibility that you have a product with an audience of one, and you obviously want to find a product that has a much bigger market than that if your intention is to either help more people or generate more income.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. It's a great point. Honestly, when we launched and we did this, I think my initial thought was, kind of like hero imagery with like someone running like an Iron Man, with their diabetes and going to do it. And yeah, that's great. That might be a part of this. But the feedback we got was clearly, almost in that complete opposite way, which I wouldn't have originally had thought, that people find value in this area, this concept, but really want to keep things more personal at a personal level as well. So that was neat.
And one other thing I'll chime in on that too is one of the more valuable pieces of feedback I've gotten in the last 10 or so years in entrepreneurship is to make sure that you're in love with your ideal customer and not in love with your product. And I can think of, with my own company, Storybox, a time where I missed a major pivot by over a year because I was so in love with what we were doing that I wasn't listening to what our customers actually wanted. And if you really remain fixated on the customers and the people you're serving, and you have the humility to not hold too tightly to the product that you've built, you might gain some really valuable insights and uncover an even bigger opportunity. And there's so many companies historically that have had to abandon a beautiful, perfect product that wasn't what their customers needed. And because they abandoned it, they found something much, much bigger. But I think it's a really difficult thing to manage of being able to listen to that feedback and utilize it effectively.
And Justin, I'm going to piggyback on that real
Yeah.
quick too. As I heard you talking, just made me think. It's so this idea has been in my head for a while, right? I've had this idea for several years, and I had this image in my head of exactly what this is going to be. And this is kind of the big learning through this process is just by doing it and taking this step of taking action, getting out in the market, getting the feedback has been so critical to changing my mind about what direction to go with this. Because it's not until you get it out there and actually try it that you're going to be stuck with this thought in your head for a year. And I've had it, I'm at fault for that. I've had it in my head for a long time. Finally getting out there, getting this feedback is like incredibly important. And so that's why I just encourage, everyone listening is that, it sounds cliche, but it really is not until you take the step out there and do it, get the feedback. The idea in your head could be totally off. And you could be passionate about, you could love the idea. Like I was kind of stuck in this one idea, but we get some feedback and now we're going to go in a slightly different direction. So I think that's important.
Awesome. Well, I know there's still ground to cover, but we're approaching the end of our time. I always like to keep the last question open-ended, because I know there's specific questions we didn't have time to get to, but we've got maybe four or five minutes left here. What have we not covered that you want to make sure our listeners know?
Yeah, I think it's just a few things. I got just a couple quick thoughts here. One, I think that I learned in this process is the importance of doing something that you're truly have a passion for, that you truly care about. I don't think that can be faked. If you're doing it for other reasons, I think after a couple months of doing something, not getting paid for it, you'll lose interest and it'll just kind of die off. But doing something that you're passionate about, that you're going to work, like I said, a little bit on the nights, a little bit on the weekends, is something that I think is essential. And also it's going to make you happier in the long run. You know, ultimately I'm working at something that I truly care about, that I'm passionate about the mission. I'm passionate about having an impact on other people with diabetes. And I really believe that, that I can have an impact in this space. If for some reason this doesn't become commercially viable, like, you know, in the next, you know, year or two, I still spend my time like in an area that I actually love, that I'm passionate about helping, you know, and helping people and learning in that space. And so I'm a competitive person. I don't like to lose. And so if this does take off, then awesome. Like, I'm super excited. If this doesn't take off, I feel like I spent my time in a worthy pursuit. And I think that's just really important to, you know, to share my thoughts on that.
I think that's so great. And I just want to chime in on that too. I love that, because it's, you know, the success is a lot of hard work, but it's also, I think, a little bit more luck and market forces than people are willing to acknowledge. And so what I respect about what Brian's saying is that if you are in, there was a recent interview I'm blanking on, but he talked about kind of the higher order intention of, it can't just be about money. Like, if there is something motivating you, there's a community you want to serve, there's knowledge you want to gain or a skill set you want to develop, even if it doesn't work out financially the way that you want initially, there's still a value there. And so I love that Brian has really found a product in an area that he's passionate about that helps him, you know, regardless of whether or not this becomes a massive success. And that kind of gives you extra leverage to apply to the work that you're doing.
Yep. And a couple of points here is, you know, I'm at a point in my life right now where things are very busy, like with a lot of, you know, people right now. I've got, you know, a busy job. I have three young kids, you know, a wife. I've got a lot of time commitments. And what I learned in these last, you know, 6 or 8 months is that, you know, you can still pursue the side hustle and still test it and still go do it. And that's been my biggest learning, because I sometimes, you know, would doubt that. Gosh, can I manage this and balance it all? And it is really possible. And some of the tools we talked about with, you know, Fiverr and Upwork, and taking your time and doing this, it's okay. I went through feelings of guilt sometimes. We're like, gosh, why aren't I going all in on this? You know, I should quit my job and sell the house and, you know, just go all in. And I'm not doing that. Like, so is it going slower than it would normally go? Yes. But you can still make very meaningful progress towards that, where, you know, you can scale up when the timing is right. But with a busy day job and kids and life and everything else, like, it is still possible to do. And that's been a really, kind of really good confidence builder for me, over the last year.
That's awesome. And I think it's, I think that's much more relevant to a lot of listeners, where it's not this sterile lab environment where you just have unlimited time and resources to devote to something. And I know in some ways that might seem like a liability, but I've just seen so many people where that's actually an asset, where there's less time wasted and you're having to prioritize and really deploy your time in a more efficient manner. And that can actually be an incredible asset.
Yep. And then finally, just one more thing, you know, we touched this a little bit earlier, but it's so important to have, you know, a support group and a group of peers to help you out. Actually, the only reason I went from the idea in my head to actually going out and doing, you know, launching a crowdfunding campaign was because of support from actually a veteran group that I meet with once a month. And so we do like a live webinar every month to give support. But because of that group, you know, I shared my idea with them, and they're like, go do it. And they kind of gave me some ideas to go get it launched. That's how we got out the door. And I used to keep my ideas to myself and just like, oh, you know, just keep it secret, keep it inside. But what I'm finding in the last 6 or 8 months is that the more people you tell, the more people you share, they're going to connect you with their network or support you, or, you know, or help you out in ways that you wouldn't expect. And so I encourage people to share the ideas and get a network to help them stay accountable and to give them some best practices.
I love that, and the vast majority of entrepreneurs that I meet with protect their idea in a way that I think is not helpful. And the number of times I've met with someone where they're like playing cards close to their chest, and it's like, well, I want you to sign what's called a non-disclosure agreement first, or I'm in a stealth mode, I'm not talking about it. And it's like, my experience is the truth. No one gives a shit about your startup. It's so hard to get people's attention. And I have very rarely met someone where they launch something and people are just ripping it off the shelves. It's much, much, much much, much more often the case that you launch and you're just fighting for attention from a million competing things, and there's so much noise, and being heard is so difficult. And so what I love about what Brian's saying here, it's absolute gold that he's giving you, is there is so much to gain by sharing your idea and learning from someone else and advice and connections. And there is a risk. I think it's very, very tiny. It's overstated. There is a risk that someone maybe takes that and runs with it. But I think there's by far more to gain than to lose. So Brian, I appreciate your candidness today. And for listeners, there are a ton of show notes for this episode. Brian's shared a lot of great resources, so check those out. He's also graciously volunteered to make himself available as you have questions. So his contact information will be there as well to contact directly, not to add to your own crowdfunding mailing list, but hopefully people don't abuse that. And Brian, I appreciate your time today. Well, thank you so much for listening and for supporting Beyond the Uniform. Beyond the Uniform is produced and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our staff is entirely part-time. They do this on nights and weekends out of the goodness of their hearts to give back to the military community. Our director of outreach is Steve Bain, who relentlessly books guests, finds sponsors, puts together our newsletter, and thousands of other critical tasks every single week, all behind the scenes to keep Beyond the Uniform running smoothly. Our editor is Kathleen Dillon, who listens to and transcribes every single episode to help out those who don't have the time to listen to the show. It has a major impact on our site's SEO value, which helps people find us through Google. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge, who pours over the data each and every month to help us better understand how to best serve the Beyond the Uniform audience. Our digital production work is done by Michael Cummings, who puts together custom artwork for every episode. If you're enjoying Beyond the Uniform, the best way to help us out is by telling your friends and fellow service members and veterans. iTunes reviews, believe it or not, have a big impact on getting the word out as well. So if you have a chance to leave a positive review, that is greatly appreciated. If you know of a business that would like to get their product or service in front of a military audience, we are always on the lookout for sponsors, which helps us subsidize the cost of putting this show together. And if you haven't yet signed up for our newsletter, you can do so at beyondtheuniform.io. We send out a newsletter twice a month, and it is a treasure trove of helpful information for your civilian career and transition. And be sure to check out our coaching program, where you can be connected with a subsidized professional, certified executive and career coach to help you in your career decision making. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more stories from military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.